Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Well, it's good to be with you all again, as it's not my first time, and nice to be back on the island. We do have, as much as we move, we also have a tradition of not going back. It's one of our things that we have to spend at least a year away before we can go back, and often it's recommended to spend at least two. It's now been almost six since I was on Vashon, but. But it is good to be here with you. I will start with a story, actually, from the experience he was mentioning, the blog. It's actually a place where I met my wife. The World Council of Churches every summer hosts a month-long gathering where people from the three Abrahamic traditions, so the Christian, Jewish, and Muslim faiths get together, and they spend a month living together in this chateau just north of Geneva in Switzerland. And we spend the time doing activities together. So some of it is just being together and getting to know each other. But we also have sessions of actually trying to learn about each other's traditions. We present about each other's traditions. And there was a blog that I wrote, and it was partly in response to an incident that happened. And I'm reminded of it, I think, every time I come into another tradition's worship space, because there was an Episcopal priest who now happens to be a bishop, actually, and became the ecumenical and interfaith officer for the Episcopal Church in Canada. And he wrote about me, actually, because we went to a mosque in Geneva, and it's a massive mosque. There were 1,000 worshipers all together on a Friday afternoon, and it was just pretty impressive, right? In the middle of the day on Friday, and they all left work to come and pray, and we were there. We were invited to be there, and I will say that most of my Christian and Jewish colleagues sat in the chairs at the back that they had provided for our group. And for me, I just went up and participated in prayer. And the Episcopal priest that day, he didn't talk to me about it. He talked to everyone else about it, about how scandalized he was by the, and I was one of the few actually ordained pastors in the Christian group. Most of them were people who consider themselves Christian, but they weren't leading faith communities. And so he was scandalized by the fact that I would participate in prayer in that space. And I heard about it again, it's like secondhand. He had already written other people and talked about it. And it made me, I don't know, all the more adamant that that was exactly what I needed to be doing, and I was more than happy to scandalize people and continue, I hope, to scandalize Koshin occasionally. So if you end up, if he gets warped a little bit, I apologize, but we're friends, and I think it's important. And part of what I felt like was important about it, and the same was true when I come to the Zen Center, I practice, I come and I sit and I meditate and I join in the prayer, and I feel like that's a way of honoring what is sacred here. When I talk about things that are sacred and holy, it's important to know that we recognize that in each other. If I recognize your sacredness and your worth, then I also have to recognize what is sacred to you, or I'm not really recognizing your sacredness or your worth. I'm just giving lip service, and that doesn't work for me. I'm not big on just saying something. You do have to live it and mean it. And so I was actually really proud. In 2010, the National Council of Churches got together in New Orleans. And it was actually the last time that the National Council of Churches had a General Assembly. They haven't had one since then. They've changed their format and done other things. But it was this huge gathering, several thousand people from all over the country, and then actually quite a few from all over the world. And trying to come up with different statements to put out from a pretty diverse community. And I've always said that actually it's harder to agree with people who are within your own tradition than it is from people outside of your tradition, because you have this assumption that because you're in the same tradition, at least overall heading of Christians, you should already agree on things, and you don't. And that's problematic for a lot of people. And so we were, there was a resolution that I had actually helped work on that was on honoring the sacredness of the other. And it actually came out of an experience of knowing that that year there had been all of these really hateful things that had to do with places of worship that were being desecrated. There were a number of synagogues and mosques and churches as well that had been desecrated. It was the whole burning of the Quran by the guy in Florida that got lots of national media attention back then. All of that was going on, and it felt really important for the National Council of Churches to make a statement about that and actually put it into a resolution that said, this is who we are. It's not just a statement in response to one event. It has to be about who we are. And so we drafted a resolution about honoring the sacredness of the other. And it kind of said what I just said in terms of, if I believe you are sacred, which our traditions say that we hold all people to be sacred, well, then I also have to hold sacred the things which you hold sacred. Now, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden your scripture becomes my scripture, but it does mean I understand that it's sacred to you, and therefore at least I will give it that importance and that honor that's due. Now, we do the same thing in our own traditions. Like I said, we this morning we've said a prayer, and I could have chosen to just be silent and not said the prayer. It's in Japanese, and my Japanese is pretty rusty. Although, to be fair, I actually did study Japanese, so if I really thought about it, I could maybe come up with something. But I've also read it in English, as it happens, which might be rare for the Christian pastor to have already read it. But I also respect that it's what we're doing. The same thing happens in a Christian church. There's a story I heard from a man named Justo Gonzalez. Justo Gonzalez is famous because he wrote the book called The History of Christianity. There's only one book that actually gets to have that title, and he wrote it, right? Lots of people write about the history of Christianity, but his is actually titled The History of Christianity, two volumes. And he tells this story about his priest, actually, when he was a kid. He grew up in a Catholic tradition, though. He's actually now a United Methodist pastor. But he tells a story about going to the priest and saying, "Father, I have trouble with the creed." And they say the creed every Sunday in that church. And he says, "I'm having trouble saying the creed." And what he's really saying is, I don't believe all of that, and I don't want to keep saying stuff that I don't believe. And the priest says, "I understand, but keep saying the creed." And he comes back about a month later to the priest and says, "Father, I'm still having trouble saying the creed." And the priest says, just keep saying the creed. And again, another month later, he comes back to the priest and says, "Father, I keep saying the creed, and I'm still having trouble with the creed." And the priest says, "I know, but it's not your creed. It's the church's creed. And that's why we say it. And his point was really one of saying that, you know, really, I think if he were to elaborate more, he'd say if everybody in this church were to think about what they're saying and really try to force one creed into something that we all believed exactly in, we would never say anything. We wouldn't have anything to stand on as a church either. And we would lose something that is actually a huge part of the foundation of what brings us together. And that for him, it wasn't about all of us agreeing with everything. Because I'm sure everyone at the Puget Sound Zen Center agrees about everything, but most places don't. So it's one of those things that we have to find a way beyond that. If we're going to honor each other, if we're going to honor our own sacredness, if we're going to honor the sacredness of our traditions. And I take that into a lot of different avenues. When I wrote my dissertation, my doctorate is in interfaith dialogue. And I only have one. I have three master's degrees, but only one PhD. I'll do another one, though, I promise. Because I do love learning. It's really, I don't care about the titles and degrees. And I even told Koshit, I was like, I don't usually use the title reverend because I struggle with it. Because to be a reverend means one who is revered. And boy, I don't. That's a lot of pressure. I don't think of it that way. If anything, we all should be revered and sacred. But when I was writing, my whole focus was on if you're gonna share interfaith things, there should be a faith component. It shouldn't just be about doing something nice together. The largest interfaith organizations, especially in this country, I would actually argue do absolutely nothing that has to do with faith. What they do are service projects. And they'll go build houses together, and they'll go to, and there are great things about that. I love that we can get together and break down some barriers and do that. But if we don't include the reason why our traditions ask us to do that, then we're not honoring each other in the way that we could. And that activity could become something sacred and holy because we actually honored the fact that most of our traditions actually teach us something about helping each other, actually teach us something about serving one another. And so I actually wrote a series of worship services that were ways that I felt like even in a church we could honor sacred and holy moments that come from other traditions and understand that there are ways to learn from those things. In the midst of that, I was invited to celebrate Eid at the Seattle Convention Center, or Washington Convention Center, I guess, in Seattle. There's 10,000 Muslims came on a Friday afternoon to the Washington Convention Center. And it was really awkward because they put those of us who were representing organizations on this like table, like up above things. It was incredibly awkward. And then we all got interviewed, and I got interviewed by Como, and they asked me why I was there. And I said, well, I'm here for a lot of reasons. One, because I'm comfortable with this prayer, and I actually intend to participate. But two, I'm here because I think Christians have a lot to learn from Muslims about prayer. And I got a lot of hate mail after that experience. I have always said that if I get hate mail, I must be doing something right. But it was what I said, and I did elaborate to say that I think that a tradition that actually invites you to pray specifically five times a day, and actually invite you to pray more than that. Five is the minimum. And that can get 10,000 people together on a Friday afternoon. There's something important about that. And something special that I think that a lot of our Christian traditions have forgotten. Because I feel like that used to be part of what we did. And still is for some Christians, but we lose things. And so I just feel like there's so much to learn from one another. Another example for me is one that when Koshin and Dune were over at my house, I mentioned that I wrote a article that will eventually get published, except I keep changing it, that was actually about scripture. Because I think that's one of the areas where we have a hard time trying to figure out how to recognize the sacredness of someone else's scripture without taking it as our own. But also, not everybody uses that term. It's a term that the Abrahamic traditions have an easy time with, sort of. I say sort of because we still struggle with the parts of each other's that we actually do recognize but then don't talk about. And I think Islam does a great job, actually, of it, because in Islam, the Quran actually mentions the people of the book. And they mean the Bible, the Old and New Testament. When they say people of the book, they don't mean the Quran. And they're specifically referencing Jews and Christians and the respect for the Holy Scriptures that come from those traditions and actually own them as part of their tradition as well. And so it's actually the only tradition I know of that actually in their scripture mentions other scriptures and the sacredness of other scriptures. There may be others. I don't claim to know everything, but I've read a lot and I've never seen that anywhere else. But then it opens up a discussion about what is scripture. And I've led several workshops globally, and I just led one with the Church Council of Greater Seattle about this issue, about how do we recognize and what is scripture. And the paper that I wrote actually talked about the icon in Orthodox Christianity, which is considered to be they're written, they're not painted. Like, we look at them sometimes, if you're outside of the tradition, we look at it, it's some beautiful art in an icon, but an iconographer would actually be offended if you called it beautiful art, because it's not meant to be art at all. It's meant to be a written visual representation of scripture, and in that way it's meant to be seen as scripture. And in Buddhism there's a tradition of the mandala, which is also could be considered a form of scripture, because it actually represents many of the hallmarks of what we would call scripture or sacred writing in the way that it is created. Now, my take on it was we need to open up that term and try to understand that there are traditions that have ways of codifying their faith and telling the story of their faith that don't look the same but need to be honored in the same way. And my hope is that as we try to learn more about each other, that we'll find ways to recognize that. We'll find ways to see the holy and sacred and know that there's something we have to learn from each other. And not just what we have to learn from being friends and hanging out together, but what we have to learn from the practice of each other's faith and how the practice of someone else's faith may actually help us practice our own faith better. I've always said that interfaith work, which scares some people because they feel like they may lose their own faith, actually, it usually has the opposite effect. When you have to go and represent your own faith with other people, it forces you to actually know more about your own faith and really examine the things that make you a practitioner of that faith. And usually, I think it actually makes you stronger and certainly more knowledgeable about your own faith. And I hope that that people won't be afraid of that and will continue to do that. Again, I have trouble with timing. Usually I spend 2 hours or more talking about this, where I once did an entire 10-week quarter talking about this subject. So I don't want to take too much time. I'd really rather be open to questions. I just want to say that My being is really about experiencing faith and experiencing each other, and I honor the sacredness of this place, and know that that sacred and holy things go on here. And I will say that I cannot believe in a God that would condemn 2/3 of the world that don't practice Christianity. That wouldn't make any sense to me. And so I have been known to be a Christian pastor who is married to a Muslim woman and is officially, I have official legal documents that say I'm a Muslim. And yet I'm just as comfortable here in the Zen Center and have spent time in a number of other traditions. And officially, I'm also Jewish because my mother's mother's mother was Jewish. And in the Orthodox tradition, it's matrilineal descent, which makes me 100% Jewish. So I got a lot of bases covered. But I also do recognize the sacredness in all those things. All jokes aside, it's part of who I am because I think it's that important. And I think we all have ways of relating to whatever's out there, God, higher power, whatever it might be, that also has to do with ourself and that looking inward as well.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.